Welcome to Your Path to Nonprofit Leadership, the weekly podcast that provides you with the insights and strategies to excel on your nonprofit leadership journey. I'm your host, Patton McDowell, and thrilled to have you join me for another strategic leadership conversation. Now, this episode is sponsored by PMA's Mastermind Leadership Development Program, now accepting applications for the 2024 summer and fall cohorts. Now, if you're ready to enhance your leadership skills and connect with a national community of nonprofit leaders just like you, now's the time. Go to the Mastermind page at pmanonprofit.com to learn more and apply. That's pmanonprofit.com/mastermind. Well, I've got another great conversation for you. It's number 252, and it features Brian Quayle, a talented and experienced nonprofit leader who's literally defined for us five frameworks for leadership excellence in the nonprofit sector. And he's got practical strategies to navigate leadership transitions, engagement of stakeholders, and to help you drive mission-driven change. Best of all, he's put his four decades of experience into a new book called The Ultimate Guide for New Nonprofit CEOs. There is much to take away from this conversation, so don't forget to check out the show notes for this and every episode of our podcast. Go to the podcast page at pmanonprofit.com, and you will learn more about this and other conversations to help you on your leadership journey. Without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Brian Quayle. Brian, thank you for joining me on The Path.
Patton, it is a pleasure to be here, and thank you for the great work that you're doing within the nonprofit sector to impact leadership of current CEOs, up-and-coming CEOs, and obviously their staff and board members. It's truly an honor to be with you today.
Well, Brian, the honor's all mine. I'm excited. You and I share a passion for leadership in this sector, and I'm looking at the cover of the book that our listeners need to get their hands on. It's called The Ultimate Guide for New Nonprofit CEOs. We're going to unpack it. There's so much good information and practical information here, but let's start with that fundamental question, you know, and I know this we'll get into as to why you wrote it, but why do so many nonprofit executive transitions fail? What are some of the fundamental problems that hurts a talented new person, make them unable to succeed in a new nonprofit leadership role?
Yeah, this is going to sound pretty simple, but it's really, I think, gets right to the heart of the matter, is that when a new CEO comes in, there's no onboarding plan for the new person that's going to lead the organization moving forward. You know, in putting this book together, with wanting, and just through my four decades of working in the nonprofit sector, 25 as president CEO of three different national affiliations, I was always amazed at kind of the churn of what would happen to new people. And when I stepped away from my work, my day-to-day responsibilities as a CEO, I then kind of looked at the landscape and found and did a little research and, you know, found through the Harvard Business Review, you know, that one third to one half of new CEOs will fail in the first 18 months on the job.
Wow.
And that just really struck me. And then knowing that on average, you know, CEOs in the nonprofit sector on average will be in their roles 5 to 6 years. And there's a PwC study that was out there, PricewaterhouseCoopers, that said, you know, that number is going to decline within the next 3 to 5 years. And then as we see the churn of nonprofit CEOs just annually, it's about at an 18 to 22% clip. And, you know, I kind of stepped back and I looked at what the issues were. And I found, you know, that 13% of nonprofits have a written succession plan.
13, you said, only 13.
Only 13%, which means right. Obviously 87% have no written succession right. document, which then led me to the assumption, and I couldn't find relevant data on this, But that, you know, my hunch and hypothesis is that when it comes to the transition, the search is over, they've hired somebody, there's certainly no onboarding program that's happening for most of these nonprofit, you know, leaders coming in. And I also, you know, found this to be true in my experiences in, in three of my leadership positions that I held, that there wasn't a formal process to onboard the CEO. And I should also say there's usually not a onboarding process for the C-suite executives that are a part of one CEO management team. So this is what really compelled me to want to put together this book, The Ultimate Guide for New Nonprofit CEOs, because I felt that like that new parent who laments, oh, you know, nobody has given me a manual of how to be a good parent, right? As yes. As they're trying to take care of their screaming child and not understanding what's going on. And I thought, you know, hey, I think I can do this. And Patton, as you know, we've talked earlier that, you know, writing a book is a labor of love. And, yes. And this took me over 2 years to put together, but I decided I was going to take the time to do it right and to give it good thought and hopefully good guidance for people who need it. Because as a practitioner myself, I am committed and have the passion, as you do, to say, how can I help new men and women going into there to be a CEO for the first time? And also people who are looking to do possible transitions to want to be in the nonprofit sector. And yeah. As I've said to others, you know, I had three different CEO opportunities, and just because I was a CEO the first time didn't mean I didn't use my five frameworks in each of the other two, because I did, because guess what? I was new into each of those organizations, new into each of those communities. I needed to dig heavy and to learn quickly in order to, you know, make the mission come alive and to, you know, take care of the people we were in charge to take care of.
Yep. So well put, Brian. And we're going to unpack every one of those frameworks. It's fantastic. Again, I'll reinforce, as one who is looking both in my podcast discussions as well as my reading for practical takeaways. And I guarantee we've got listeners now who are like, yep, Brian, they parachuted me into my last executive job and nobody told me exactly what to expect. Or someone listening now thinking about going into executive leadership, this is going to help them prepare. But for a minute, before we do that, let's go back through your journey. I'm guessing through your wonderful executive experience over the last four decades, you had some less than ideal orientations yourself. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it's fair to say. And each time it was with good people that were well-intentioned in terms of, you know, board volunteer leadership. So that's not a knock on any of my assignments of where I personally was. But I just had, I was blessed coming into my positions of knowing that I had a plan and I had a strategy, which were these five frameworks, to put it together. And, you know, in one of my CEO hires, when they hired me, the person who was ahead of the search committee and also was ahead of the board got promoted. And so, you know, he was committed to stay in the board chair role and to see it through till the end of his board term. But to be quite honest with you, Pat, the only time I saw him was before board meetings, because he was living in another community. And, you know, and the other leadership folks on the board or the other board members just felt strongly that, you know, hey, he's your guy, you're reporting to him, you've got to, you know, we're not going to upset the apple cart, which was fine, but I really didn't have much time. I mean, it was literally, as you just said, parachuted in, glad you're here. Hey, I'll see you next board meeting, but, you know, I've got my new transition. I got to get to do, you know, what I'm hired to do on a daily basis. And, you know, I know your listeners out there probably have their own stories.
Exactly.
And this guide, and we'll talk about it later, but I guarantee if you follow it, you're going to be successful.
Well, what I like about the guide too is it I think reinforces the point that I often would make, because I know their listeners like, yep, that was me, or that was a scenario similar to mine. But you have to own your own orientation, don't you, Brian? You've got to have your own plan, because it may not be there for you.
That's it in a nutshell. You put it so well. And, my intention, even in putting this book together, Patton, was, do I use the word onboarding in the title? Do I, and I felt, I wanted to reach all leaders, all levels. And while I did put new nonprofit CEOs, but I know that those people that have the fire in the belly that are, working with their CEOs and desire their next steps, they'll want this book, because I think it will help them as a training tool to say, hey, where are you strong and where are you maybe kind of have some vulnerabilities in your blind spot? And hopefully this book can help you to kind of get to, addressing those things before you become or go into that CEO role. So that's what I'm really pumped about this book. I had a great career and I helped millions of people. I raised over $1 billion during the course of my career in terms of overseeing, strategizing, being a part of those campaigns. And, this is kind of my next chapter of my journey, Patton, is to say,
help.
Okay, how can I still want to help people, but now I want to help the people who are leading the institution, and what can I do for them? How can I be there for them? Yeah.
Well, I want to underline several things you said, but number one is, I think this concept obviously is important for someone who aspires to nonprofit leadership at the executive level. This is a guide that will help them. But also, Brian, it reinforces the point that as a current leader, when you have new talent arriving on particularly your leadership team, you need to be attentive to this process, right? To help them.
Yes. And I always, my main goal with all my direct reports is that I always look to help them to get them to their next level. That was my job, because that's what somebody did for me. And I really, really believe that truly good leaders, truly great CEOs established kind of the path, apropos to
thank you. I appreciate that.
Is how can you help somebody on their path? Because where I sit now, as one person has said to me, Brian, your leadership tree is pretty strong out there. You should be really proud of what you've done and how you've gotten kind of different leaders out to so many different areas, and doesn't have to be in a CEO position, but levels of commitment, authority, and that to me that's what this is about, to be a responsible servant leader in this business. And it is a business.
Indeed it is. And you're going to talk about that, because to be effective, you're going to have to get to the root of that business. For our listeners that don't know you yet, and they will, because I'm going to encourage them to check you out in the show notes and all that, but talk about some of the organizations you work with, Brian. Yeah. You've had great experiences. Maybe you could give a shout out to some of those organizations.
I do. I'm very proud of the three I work for. I was with the United Way system for 17 years, 9 as within the fundraising arena and 8 as a chief executive officer. Then I transitioned to the American Red Cross and was the CEO of the Louisville area chapter of the American Red Cross in Louisville, Kentucky, where we covered Louisville and the Kentucky counties and also Southern Indiana. That was a part of the territory, and also had disaster responsibilities for the Commonwealth of Kentucky as well, when big disasters came, because we were one of the bigger chapters. And then my last assignment was with the Boys and Girls Clubs of Broward County, and just had a wonderful 11-year run there. and you know, taking care of at-risk youth and families. And really, I like to say in each of the three that, you know, I left each organization better than I found it.
Good point.
Always want to do. And, you know, just enjoyed how, you know, my career went, and it goes by so quickly. And at the same time, you know, really dealing with big issues from, you know, Hurricane Katrina to, you know, 9/11 to, you know, just so many other things, obviously COVID most recently. And, you know, all those things that are just, you know, things you need to deal with that nobody can tell you how to prepare for those. But, you know, as they say, you know, tough times don't last, but tough people do. And so, you know, those are things that I just relished about my career and just working with great volunteers, staff, and obviously people who we were helping who grateful, aspire, you know, they too aspire to new heights, new things. And so I've been a lucky guy.
Well, and you've practiced what you preach. And again, I think that's why I wanted our listeners to know that you've worked for some wonderful organizations. You've been able to exercise the leadership muscles that now you are in turn teaching. And of course, you worked with wonderful leaders within each of those three organizations. So this is an experience-based practical manual. And as our listeners will find, if they get their hands on it, you've broken it down into really five frameworks that I think make so much sense. And I'm going to ask you to kind of explain each one as I walk through them. And, you know, we can talk about some of the practical applications. But the very first thing I want to ask you about is that you say, all right, the first 90 days is literally the first framework. So why 90 days versus, you know, 120 or and what do you mean within that first framework?
Yeah. So 90 days for me was something where I believe that you can set a big, hairy, audacious goal and meet it. And what you want to do is to really kind of establish in your first 90 days that you're going to learn the strengths and the weaknesses about your organization that you're coming into. And the 90-day portion of my book is actually six chapters. But it's the foundation of what I believe will be your whole CEO experience, because it was mine. And in 90 days, I did what I would call, I was on a fact-finding mission about my organization. And it's also a time when about 90 days now, it used to be that people say, yeah, you know, your honeymoon is about 6 months. Well, you know, not so much anymore. It's really about 3 months, because people, you know, want and need you to get up to speed pretty quickly. And so, you know, what I say in my book here about the first 90 days is that first you need to go beyond the four corners of your office, and you need to get out and do face-to-face meetings and see people of where they are. And to really start to engage right off the bat your management team that you've inherited. And, you know, obviously as the new leader coming in, you don't know all the issues and all the ups and downs and maybe, you know, the angst that people have with the new leader coming in. So by getting out and talking to staff, donors, funders, you know, you're really starting to set the tone of what your leadership is going to look like. So for me, I'll give you an example of one. May I do that?
Yeah, absolutely. I was hoping in each of the five frameworks, maybe a single example to help us understand.
Yeah. So, you know, in my United Way assignment, when I was with the United Way, the Heart of Florida United Way, in my first 90 days, I said that I was going to go out and see the 78 organizations that we were providing funding to, and they were providing services to about, of those 78 agencies, we were providing resources for about 100 programs. And so I made this declaration on my first day on the job, and I think everybody looked at me like, you know, this is a tri-county area. You know, how are you going to get this done? And, you know, like anything else, I, you know, kind of took the elephant and just chewed it one bite at a time. And, within that 90 days, I visited every agency at their location. And what it helped me to do is that I was able to not only visit these organizations, but I was driving the three counties that I was responsible for. And I was learning the landscape. I was seeing who these people were. I was understanding the communities that they were in, those that were blighted, those that weren't, a little bit about, how the staff kind of interacted when I came to the doors of each organization. And what I found was that when you provide empathy to people and you meet on their terms and in their area, in their arena, they're proud of what they're doing, right? And so it gave me, and they provided me information that I probably wouldn't have ever gotten if I kind of did it the other way around of, well, I'm too busy, I'm kind of got to do this work, I got to do other things, I got to meet with my volunteers or this and that. And instead, they were telling me who I should meet with. They were sharing information. And some of them even took kind of, the tact of saying, hey, here's what I would do if I were you. And I really, really loved it. I enjoyed it. And it also, in the first 90 days, in every single assignment, Patton, I always found something that I would bring forward to change in the organization and to make an impactful change. And I cannot tell you how important that is. And, the art of this also was delegating to my management team, because I was asking a lot of questions,
right?
And they had to provide a lot of answers. And it was a great way for me immediately to start evaluating who was going to be with me and who was going to understand what I was trying to do, right? And when I communicated that to the board and what I was doing, we had a context for discussion. I mean, they knew what I was doing. They wanted to know. And some of them had never stepped in front of or into any of our agencies. So it provided them an opportunity to say, well, gee, if Brian's doing that, maybe I need to get out there and do something.
Great point.
And so it was it's a great exercise to do. And as you said before, there's a lot to unpack, but know if you're listening, I provide the questions, I provide a great guide and onboarding tool that you don't have to recreate. And that's what I'm excited about with this book. I know your listeners, Patton, will enjoy it. And thank you for reading it, by the way, too, because it means a lot to me with everything you have going on and what you've done is I'm very grateful. And it's also in that 90 days, you start to develop your storytelling, your elevator speech about what you've learned in your first 90 days. And I found that people were willing and wanting to help you because you were showing them that you were here to really, make a change, make a difference, and you needed their help.
Well, applaud the practical nature. In fact, I was thinking about that. It's one thing to talk about the first 90 days in a general sense, but what you're suggesting through your example is framing a list, literally, what key stakeholders I'm going to get to in the first 90 days, which is motivational and, of course, has all the collateral benefit of relationship building. And that's what I like, Brian. I guess let me jump to the second framework, because I guess first a question: do these frameworks work in parallel fashion, or is the first 90 days kind of the onboarding to the second one, which is analyzing and understanding your team?
No, they all stand on their own. One isn't, followed by the other.
Right.
And when you read the book, you'll see how it fits. So with framework two, I like to say frameworks 2 through 4, I kind of titled them the analyzing and understanding your nonprofits, and In framework one, I kind of label that it's a time of discovery. Your 90 days is a time of discovery. You're asking your questions. And so now, as you move into really framework two, it's kind of in tandem of what you're already doing in your first 90 days.
Right.
Because, you're evaluating how your direct reports are going to respond to you. At the same time, in chapter five within framework one, I lay out a list of questions to be asked to each direct report that reported to me. And, so you basically CFO, your development person, your HR person, the folks who are direct service and, whatever the services are being provided. And so, at that time, I provided these questions while I'm driving around seeing the landscape of the community, and they're kind of back, at home, kind of collecting the information for the boss, and we're going to meet and we're going to talk about it. And it was a great way for me to see a couple things. One, how were people's writing skills? Two, how would they present in front of me when we had our one-on-one meetings? And, the other thing I did within the 90 days is that I also, at the same time, still using the United Way example, I met with every department as a group. I met with every direct report one-on-one, and I met with my direct report's direct report one-on-one as well.
Nice. Right.
And the reason why I did that is that I wanted to see, what this team was made up of, and were they going to be up to change, and who were going to be the folks that were going to kind of be with me and really had passion for the organization. And so that's why kind of that 90 days, and at the same time as you transition to looking at your team, who are you going to count on? And, I also gained information from my board members, had frank discussions in terms of them helping me to evaluate the team.
Right.
Patton, I'll be perfectly honest, I had some board members and some of my assignments say, well, we're glad you're here. There's somebody on your senior team that we thought we were going to maybe, kind of ask them to leave before you came on, but we decided
we left that for you.
Yeah, we that's your decision. And right. So sometimes, I'd say, okay. And then I'd ask them why. And then I'd, see what was going on the HR side and have those conversations. And it was a way, once again, to get different input, different information. Because I never walked into an organization thinking, oh, I know better than, and I'm going to rip and grip and change things. And no, that isn't the way to do it. It's give people a chance. And sometimes those people who were looked at as being hard and kind of challenging were actually devoted people to the mission and that I didn't want to let go. And some people were from the board surprised, while others, it was, you're right. That got to make a
time
change.
To make a change.
Well,
I want to make sure we get through at least an example of these, because these are great. And obviously we could spend an episode on just any one of these five, Brian, for sure. But jump to the financials, third framework, analyzing, understanding. Headline there, what are you looking for when you jump into a new organization financially?
Financially, I'm looking to see, what's the history of cash flow? What's the account payable looking like? What's the story that the numbers tell you as a new leader? And I'm just not talking about, audits that take place on an annual basis. I'm also trying to find out, hey, what types of audits are being, desired by our funders? I mean, so many times now as a practitioner, that when you receive money from the federal government over $750,000, you're going to get an audit, both financial and programmatic. Same thing with most likely state and county funding. So those were things I wanted to understand as a leader. The other important part of this framework is that did I have and could I count on a finance leader from the board? Was there a dynamic finance chair that I could have frank conversations with? And did I have a good staff finance leader that I could count on at the same time? And so those were things that I found that if those were lacking, then I really needed to kind of learn how and what we were going to do about it. And that's where good conversations with the auditors do come in. And
yeah, right.
To kind of help you guide and to, you know, move through things. And one point here that I make in the book that I think is really important, most people don't lean into learning and confronting things they know little about. And what I find is that the financials are usually that arena that, unless you're a CFO or, you know, somebody who likes numbers, you as a CEO are probably not going to, you know, go in that part of the field. My suggestion is you must. But if you get this book, you're going to understand how I lay this out in a practical way where you don't have to be a CFO, a CPA. I'm going to lead you through to ask the right questions, get the information, and to really understand how you're going to, you know, be a good leader, because that's, you own everything. That's what I did learn. That the buck does right. Stop and start with you.
Indeed.
And particularly if your CFO leader is going to leave, and it's happened, and good people that decided, you know, pulled away for, you know, whatever reason. And when that happened, thank goodness I was able to have the skill set and the knowledge of being able to say, we got this. And I was able to lean on my finance chair to help me through that as well. I mean, it's a true partnership.
Yeah.
And that's where in this framework, I really try to help those, you know, newbies coming in. And hey, I've even had people who have read this book who, are seasoned vets going, man, you've made some strong points and I gotta gear up more on this. So
I love that. And, you know, Brian, we've had about 130 senior leaders go through our mastermind program. The number one issue of need often in their own kind of personal education plan is financial acumen. So I'm delighted you're lifting it up. And another reason I would lift up that framework, because you're right, regardless of your path to senior leadership, you're running a business and you're going to have to be comfortable and competent in that area. And you give them practical ideas to do just that. But let me jump. I want to make sure we get to these, because the fourth one about understanding donor relationships, I'm guessing even in your first 90-day tour, are you mixing in some of those kind of donor relationships? Talk about your approach to the donor relationship framework.
Yeah, most definitely. So when I was out and about and, you know, going to different organizations, I would see and understand what organizations were not only funding our organization at United Way, but who they were funding out in the field directly, outside of the generosity we were getting through the campaign at the time. So what I do in this framework is basically I say to new leaders, break down and take a look at every revenue generating line on your income statement and understand every line that there is, from grants to, and what their reporting requirements are, how strong is your development team, and is it a strong team made up of staff and volunteers, or is it heavily staff weighted? What's the type of fundraising platform you use to track your donors? And, you know, how are you carrying out special event fundraising? Do you have any transactional revenue that you've raised within the organization, you know, charging for maybe, a membership for, you know, folks that, you know, are using your services, or are you teaching first aid and CPR in the case of Red Cross? That's right. Transactional revenue.
Right.
You know, how's that all fit the bottom line? And so, you know, after doing all that, and again, pretty exhaustive kind of exercise I go through by using the income statement, and that I kind of say, okay, if you have a line that says it's grants and individual giving, you know, you've got to know every piece of information behind that number and that heading. And so, you know, are the grants coming from, you know, private foundations? Are they coming from, you know, donors that, have a family foundation? What makes up that money? And, you know, in the first year, you've got to do that. And I like to say here is that in the first year, you're working in the business. But after the first 12 months, you got to get out of that as the leader and you've got to work on the business. So that's why this exercise for me is so important, because that's where you need to make sure that you have the people in the right seats. And that once when you go to start to work on the business, you know that the day-to-day operations are being handled by great people that have, you know, the best at heart for the mission. And that I always would say to my team, my job is to take away your roadblocks to be successful. Yeah. What do you need? How can I help you? And I like to say in this section that I embrace the concept of an abundance mindset to find the needed dollars to carry out the mission critical work. And I always would say, remember, people give to people. They don't give to organizations. And some people bristle at that. But to be quite honest with you,
Pat, you've seen it, right? You know it.
You know it. You feel it. And, you know, people do give to people, because if they know that your board chair is a part of your organization and you're providing much needed service and they brought that individual in, you know, they're going to feel good about that. And they may want to give more, and they may know others to do the same. And so that's where this becomes inherently important, because for me, board members need to be your treasure hunters. They're the ones who can help you set the table. And I talk a lot about that in this book. And, you know, how you're going to prepare to make a call, to make a big ask. And, you know, it's, you know, the easy part is making the ask. The hard part is getting all the information and doing the good data review, but also understanding the community connections of, you know, what your current revenue looks like and where you want to expand it and how you're going to expand it in a way to, you know, do more of your mission.
Well put, as always, and love how you've tied together the third, basically know your numbers, know your financials, and then know the people behind it. As you moved into the fourth framework, I was struck by that point that it's more than just a printout, you know, more than just a report. You want us to know who are the individuals, the foundations, the companies, and other revenue sources that build those relationships. And that is a fantastic, again, part of this orientation. I'm going to jump to the fifth one, Brian. Compelling, intriguing. You simply called the fifth framework the who question mark. All yes. Right. What do you mean by that?
The who. So I basically here encourage, you know, the person who picks up the book is the who are the people you serve and how you show that through your mission. So it's real important here that, you know, that you've met with your staff, the donors, the funders, and you are finalizing, you know, what I believe are having the right people in the right seats to take the organization forward. So an example I will use here for you is I think a good one. And it has to do with, I give an example in the book about a food program we established for at-risk youth. And so initially in the first 90 days when I was traveling around, I found that some of our locations had snacks for the kids while others didn't. And I found that there were, you know, we had about 12 different club sites that we had. Three of them, the kids were getting snacks. And it was because of the energy and the passion of some volunteers who said, hey, we need to get these kids a snack after school for a lot of various reasons. Which then when I talked to staff and was seeing people out there, you know, the club locations that didn't have the snack were kind of looking at me going, okay, as a new leader, how are you going to make that happen for us? We want snacks for our kids too. And, you know,
exactly.
And my review was, well, of course you do, because I want that too. And So one of the things that I do here is that to say in this is to understand not only was it important for us to get snacks for the kids, but what we learned is that the kids that had free and reduced lunch program in the school, they needed a hot meal before they went home at night because they might not be eating when they get home, and they might not eat until the next day until they get to school for their free and reduced lunch. And so we found that people were living in food deserts. We found that they weren't eating well because they didn't have enough resources to get vegetables and good meat and other things instead of the fast food stuff. And so for us, the who then to the question was, we first tackled, okay, every location will get a snack. Then it was, okay, how do we now transition and find a program to try to feed these kids before they go home at night? And fortunately for us, I won't finish the rest of the story because you got to buy the book.
That's why we're here. And again, you've teased us with enough detail to understand the practical nature and the value. But as we close, let me ask you this question. And you and I talked about this beforehand, that it strikes me that while this is very kind of nonprofit staff driven and practical, board members need to hear this too. So, how do you or should we involve the board in a process like the one you have laid out in the book?
First of all, I'm a big proponent that every board leader should read this book, because they will provide, I think, the context of people really needing and understanding the purpose of what onboarding will do for the organization. And so, what I believe is really important is that you have to have a plan for the board to get involved and to get engaged. And
Yes.
sometimes I think as leaders, we don't ask our board members to step up. And I can honestly say that in each of the organizations that I was a CEO of, going in there, we had a certain amount of people who were, doing a lot, and we had some folks who weren't. And so we implemented strategies to engage those board members who weren't engaged. And we did it well, but we did it through a board-to-board member process. And again, it's called the board scorecard that I, had shared within this book, and really focuses on two pieces. What's the commitment financially your board members are making, and do they show up, and are they present to be a part of mission critical work as a board member? Are they meeting their fiduciary responsibilities? And that's where board members, in my estimation, busy people want to know what they need to do, and they'll do it. And we as CEOs are sometimes shy about not asking them to do that. And on the flip side, I'm also on a mission, on a path here to also say to board members, if you want to stem the tide of a leadership crisis that your organization won't see a revolving door of your CEO, you need to be engaged, and you need to understand the frameworks as well as the CEO you're hiring. And more importantly, what's the role that you can play to be supportive? And what's the time, talent, and treasure that you provide as a board leader that's going to make a difference to impact the mission moving forward?
Fantastic. Just like everything else you've shared, Brian. And as we have said more than once, the book offers so many different directions you can go, but it also brings a comprehensive plan together for the executive leader, the aspiring executive leader, and as you just put it, the board members who need to support this process. So let me ask you a last question, final advice. If someone's listening saying, all right, I feel more equipped, Brian, to jump into a new CEO role, anything else you'd add?
I'll say this. If I was one of your listeners out there, I think I'd be saying, okay, if I read this book, Brian, are you going to guarantee success? And my answer will be the following: yes. But
Good.
know that simple isn't the same as easy. And so it's not going to be easy initially to implement and to do all the five frameworks once when you see what's involved. But I guarantee that if you implement them with your team, that you take the time to do as I suggest, as I, and this is again, practitioner to practitioner, I used this and used it well, and it served the organization and me as a leader to really kind of drive my organizations forward. And I know that people will be successful, and, to be in this business, in my opinion, is really a gift. And I want to make people feel that way and see that, because I know that people can get burnt out, feel unappreciated. My book is basically saying you're more than appreciated. You know, here is something for you where you don't have to start from square one. Here is a path. Here is a guide. Here is an onboard process that will take you to the next level for success.
Yep. Not many times do you hear an author say you have a guarantee to come with the book that you're going to read. So right. I like it. Listeners, you heard it here first. This is a book that not only will help you, but it has a guarantee behind it. So Brian, before I let you go though, I guess, as you know, every guest have shared a book that meant something to them on their journey. So we're going to lift up your book for sure. But I wonder, is there one book you'd point to that helped you along the way?
Yeah, there is. And it actually helped me as when it came out, and it actually helped me to write this book. And it's called The Obstacle is the Way by Ryan Holiday.
Nice.
And it's a great book. And basically, it's a book that says, if you have an obstacle and it's in your way, don't go around it, but solve it. And it gives great leadership examples of so many different people. And I'm a history buff. So if you love history, if you love, you know, leaders and understanding leadership, The Obstacle is the Way is a great book. So, you know, get my book and then you'll see why
where it came in.
Yeah. I like The Obstacle is the Way.
Yeah, I big fan of Ryan Holiday. I get his e-newsletter. Yep. He is a real advocate for Stoic philosophy, makes the Stoic philosophy accessible. So thank you, Brian, for adding to our reading list in addition to your own. And so where do you want our listeners to go to find out more about you, your book, and the great work you're doing?
Yeah, they can go to briancoyle.com. I'm also on LinkedIn, so please contact me. And my email address is bq@briancoyle.com. I'm really here to help folks and to guide people on their nonprofit journey and path, as you are, Patton. And I just really feel that this book is a book that I think people can really benefit from. So I, not because I wrote it, but because I believe in it and believe in the message. So, yeah.
Brian, grateful for your mission, literally, to help those that are following you on the path to nonprofit leadership, for all of your wisdom and for producing a book that our listeners can benefit. And I appreciate you being here with me on the path. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Brian as much as I did and found practical and insightful advice that you can take along your journey to nonprofit leadership. Now, for more information about Brian and his great book, as well as additional resources related to this episode, make sure you check out the show notes. Just go to the podcast page at pmanonprofit.com and you'll find valuable information to support you on your journey. Now, if you found this episode enlightening, as I hope you did, please share it with somebody else on the path. They may benefit as well from Brian's expertise and his book that could help them on their next stop on the path to nonprofit leadership. If you haven't already, please subscribe to our podcast. Just go back to that podcast page at pmanonprofit.com, navigate to the follow button, and that will ensure you don't miss out on any of our weekly episodes. They come out every Thursday. Thanks again for all you're doing in the nonprofit sector, especially for causes that are most meaningful for you. I'll keep bringing you content to help you do it even better. Have a great week. I'll see you next time on The Path.